remix version?
I don't even know.
Do you add in vocals? Hi, I'm Rick Hatchke.
I'm Drew Stack.
And this is the
Internet's Maximum Potential.
I forgot how somber an opening All My Life by Casey and JoJo has. It really makes you think.
It's got like three different intros. Like most songs are like that first part.
Most songs they have like one intro.
The first like 20 seconds is pretty much a legitimate intro. And then they could go into like, I would never find another lover. But then they go, baby, 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 baby. And then they do another, like, 20 seconds of interlude that also could lead into an intro. And then after that, then they, like, repeat that interlude a second time for a grand total of, like, a minute-long intro.
I was looking at the running time. It's like, that's a 5.5-minute song? Are you serious?
I'm pretty sure the substance in there is about, like, a minute. And then there's, like,
and then they just go back to the, baby, 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 baby. And then it goes back to the orchestra at the end for 2 minutes.
Just a somber interlude for the rest of the song.
Welcome to episode 15. There's been a pretty long delay in between sodes, as the hipsters would call it.
Sodes. I think you're getting too good at being a hipster.
That's true. Lee has criticized me for the language that I use. She says that most of the words and phrases that I say just feel outdated and that I don't use a lot of modern lingo. And so
you're bringing it back.
I'm not going out of my way to be like swingers and like, you know, use swing terminology. I don't even know exactly what I say, but it always feels outdated to her. So she calls me a hippie hipster, which is, you know, it's a bit of an insulting term.
It's also alliteration, Rick.
Drew, for the fun of it, decided that we'd make today like a midday slumber party.
I think I wanted to bring a different feeling to episode 15 just off the bat and make it...
The show's been really stale.
It's been really stale. No, I just don't know. It's been a week, so I thought, you know, it could be awkward. So I thought we'd just make it fun. And we're not in the normal lake house because they're doing construction outside. So we're down in the basement, kind of in a room where you'd have a slumber party, sitting on the floor and just talking. So, and I brought some candies and stuff along. So if you hear us munching on that, it's kind of to get in the mood. Here's a good,
I'm not going to have a power bar performance energized step one, Drew. I'm...
In the bag of treats, there is a power bar, which I don't know how it got there, but...
I'm probably not going to be eating, as I think that would be kind of rude to people listening. Have you not eaten since you were away at camp, Drew? Are you making... Was this heavyweights?
No, then I would have eaten a lot. I would have brought this stuff to camp.
But not once Ben Stiller showed up and was running the show.
He was a bastard. No, I was about to eat lunch today, and then I thought you were showing up at 1:15 instead of 1 o'clock. And so I didn't get to eat lunch.
So instead of delaying it and saying, hey, I'm just going to get something to eat real quick, Rick. Like, no, here's the plan. We'll just eat throughout the show.
I decided to... I'm a multitasker, Rick. I like to do multiple things at once.
We are recording the show on your brand new computer, Drew.
Yes. New MacBook Pro, 15 inches.
15 inches for episode 15.
There you go. It's actually, I think, technically like 14.8, but...
14.8 inches for episode 15.
So...
Maybe this is episode 14.8. We didn't really wrap things up with it. We got like 7/10 of the way done with episode 14 when Andrew Ivor Nelson was here.
That's right. So he needs to come back and do the last point to part of the episode. But he's difficult to track down, so...
Yeah, it'll be like another 2 years before we ever hear from him.
And he will not have a beard, which will be the ironic part, you know? So
you were away at camp?
Yes.
What was that like?
It's actually not really like camp, like in the woods, in the cabins. It's like at a retreat center in Green Lake, like really nice rooms. We used to go, the whole retreat used to be back at Lake Geneva, at the Williams Bay campus there. If you know where that is, it was featured in the film Chain Reaction starring Keanu Reeves, where he goes down to a payphone near the lake and then gets on a hovercraft across the lake.
Yeah, it's on a hoverboard.
I mix
it's
up.
It's going
mix
across the that. Lake and it's dying, and then the gang tries to go after him, and they crash into the building, and
I typically
Biff's son gets arrested.
Keanu Reeves and Michael J. Fox look a lot alike to me, so I just have issues with that. But no, anyway, it's been in that back at Lake Geneva. It was like, yeah, you know, still like kind of camp conditions. I remember one year all the dorms were full, so they moved us all out to just our church of guys out to like the boonies to like just some cabins they leased, like just on the edge of the property. And they were probably built in the 1950s and hadn't been touched since like the 1960s. And they had like holes in the roof and like they were awful. So now we're at this wonderful retreat center, which is pretty much like hotel quality, like good 3 or 4 star hotel quality where these kids are staying for this retreat. And they still have the nerve to complain. And I would sit them down and be like, listen, here's the story of the shanties. And that's what we call them, the shanties. So they wouldn't complain after that. I'd tell them like,
horror stories. So are these kids who had never been to camp before, and because the word camp was being associated with this, they decided like, oh, it's going to be miserable. Meanwhile, they're in like the jacuzzi.
Yeah, pretty much. Like just one step short of that. I think
getting
one
room service.
Yeah, exactly.
Camp is awful.
Camp is terrible. You know, I can't get the special kind of ketchup I want. I don't know. They were
Heinz Deluxe.
They were brattish a little bit, where I was like, seriously, you're going to complain? But...
well, what were they complaining about?
I don't know. And then...
I don't even know! They were just complaining.
Well, we get there, and they have these really nice hotel quality rooms. I know what Rick's thinking. He doesn't even have to say it. But we get there, and they've got these great hotel quality rooms, and we start giving off rooming assignments. And there's like... five or six to a room. And, you know, there's about 3 beds, you know, which isn't bad, but the floor is nice and carpeted and there's, you know, good amenities for each one. And compared to the dorms at Lake Geneva, it was way nicer. And they still, like, some were like, we have to have 5 or 6 to a room. I don't think there was any with 6. I think there was only 5. And then there was going to be 6 counselors in one room. So 6 full-grown men in one room, which would have been, like, way worse.
Which would have been erotic. And sweaty.
Yeah. But no, there wasn't, we weren't complaining, but they were like complaining about that. I was like, are you serious right now? So then I went down and asked for an extra room and they gave it to us. We were able to, you know, only have 4 to a room. But at the same time, it's like, seriously, you're going to complain? You have these extremely nice rooms. And so, I mean, that was that and then like food and stuff. But, and part of camp is getting dirty and like they have these nice showers to go shower often and, you know, get clean. It's not like they're not going to have a chance to get clean. They're going to be walking around caked in mud the whole day. No. Like, you go to your, like, field rec thing, you get muddy or you get, you know, covered in whatever, and then you go back and you shower. But, like, people would complain. One of our counselors refused to do it. He was such, like, a girl. Like, he might have been. I don't know.
What was his name? Sissy McSissy? Did he throw like a girl?
His name actually was Sissy McSissy.
Oh, you know Sissy McSissy?
Yeah.
From Equine, right?
Yeah. Anyway, so it was a fun experience overall, though. I really enjoyed it, and I went as a camper, so it was fun to go back as a counselor.
I've had an interesting week. After months and months of searching for employment, I hadn't heard anything at all. And I have had 2 job interviews in the past week and a half.
How did those go?
I think,
did you wear a tuxedo?
No, I did not wear a tuxedo, making an allusion to Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly and Step Brothers. I think the first one that I did an interview for, I'm kind of expecting to hear from them, like, tomorrow or Friday, that they're offering me the job. The one that I interviewed for yesterday, I think they liked me, but I don't know if I have enough managerial experience that they're looking for. But I was there for an hour and a half, and I figure if they didn't want me, they probably would have let me go around the 20-minute mark.
Yeah.
You don't keep a person around for an extra hour.
No, like,
plus.
Why would... I don't know. I've been to auditions, though, where they keep you around for, like, 2 hours, and then you don't even get, like, any role.
So, I'm... You know, it would be nice to be employed. That's sort of what I'm aiming for right now in life. I also have gotten back into improv. I found out that this Theater in Bayview. They do...
Is that the way you pronounce it? Bayview?
What?
Just the way you said it. Not the way you pronounced it, but like the...
Bayview.
Bayview. It's like a very nice part of town. Like, Bayview. And I like Bayview, but it was like... it's most people just say Bayview. Like, all one word together. Whereas you kind of, like, separated them.
Isn't it two separate words? Is it Bayview, two separate words?
I think it is. But...
As you have this giant airhead sticking out of your mouth. Like, I miss lunch, so I'm just gonna eat gummy lifesavers and airheads.
I have stomach, but I don't think I'm gonna eat it.
In Bayview. See, here's the thing that kinda drives me nuts about pronunciation. A lot of people refer to the Green Bay Packers as the Green Bay Packers. There's a weird pronunciation. Green Bay. There's a weird pronunciation on like ESPN and such.
Green Bay Packers.
Anyhow, I've gotten back into improv. I was doing comedy sports last year. I did like 5 professional shows and then never heard back from them. I don't know what happened, and I like sent an email to the person who's in charge of like player personnel.
And did you feel like you were like getting in with them pretty well? Like you're getting to know some of the guys pretty well?
Yeah, I had one bad show, but, like, 3 good shows and 1 just okay show.
And let's be honest, like, there's some people at comedy sports who really wow me, and then there's other people who are on their staff where I'm like, how did
they're just doing shtick. They have, like, the same bits that they do. Yeah.
Yeah, if you went to go see more than 1 show with them in it, you'd be like, this person's a hack.
Yeah.
So, it's like, they still...
So, performing with some of those folks...
You're like, yeah, I should be able to get my foot in the door.
And I also... I think I made a mistake because... I kind of didn't enjoy the majority of the games that I was playing. I like playing the games where it's more about the scene, and it seemed
less
like,
about the stick. Yeah.
Yeah, it seemed like I was when I was doing professional shows. I think I did maybe 1 or 2 true scene games, and the other ones were more shtick games. But this theater in Bayview, they do an open improv on Tuesday nights.
Wait, what's the name of the theater?
The Alchemist Theater. What do you have in your mouth now?
A Lindor chocolate.
Yeah.
I think I've been there, actually.
It's just a like sort of a...
working space, right?
A lounge, and then you got like 60 seats in
this
theater. Yeah,
I've been there. I did a review for the UWM newspaper of a play. We went and just kind of... they wanted us to hang around and watch it, but we just kind of interviewed some former UWM alumni who were in there, and everybody there kind of freaked us out, like, in their... whoever their production company is, not... their improv might be pretty cool, but like their production, who the director of the show, I think, was the person who freaked us out the most. Like all the people in the show were kind of cool, but the director was just really creepy. He's like, "You guys should hang around, huh? Hang out with us afterwards, yeah." And we were like, "We really don't want to be here, so we're gonna leave."
But I like this. It's basically like kind of like when I was in like high school doing comedy sports, or kind of like our class where it's more just, you know, you can go up there just sort of do more scene work. It's less about games as it is just doing scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been fun. I've done it 2 weeks now. The only thing is
So is it like pick up improv?
Yeah, cool. Essentially. And I've had, in my opinion, 2 of the best scenes of the past 2 weeks. Like the standout scene, especially last night. I was funny last night. I'm not going to lie. I was really funny.
Wow, you're really tooting your own horn here. What happened last night?
Guess who showed up, who is apparently a part of it? A person who basically was a jerk to us regarding Sketchbook. You can use his initials.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. He's there. And it's sort of like...
it's awkward because the last like interaction we had with him was asking him to do this movie, him saying he'd totally do it, and then bailing out on us in the last.
But here's how he bailed out, Drew. He called you, and what did he say? We were going to you. I was not going to be there that night.
He didn't even pick up his phone, or like, you know, didn't call us back or anything. Because that's fine. Like flaking out on that level is okay.
No. What did he do, Drew?
I forgot the exact wording that he said.
I believe it was in regards to the script that it.
Yeah, it was something like. We gave him the script, he looked over it, and we told him what we were doing with it, like, the whole film.
And what part we wanted him to be.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're offered a part to be in a friend of yours movie, you're happy with it. You're free. Like, oh, it's great, not, they thought of me for this part.
It's not like he's got a SAG card or anything. He's not even that funny of a guy. He was just kind of funny. We liked him. We got along with him well, and we thought he'd be, you know, good in this role and fill it pretty well.
So first of all, he wanted to be one of the other, like, the fun, one of the parts that Drew and I were going to do. He wanted to be. And it's like, no, this is what we have for you.
Yeah.
So he agreed to do the filming on a Friday night, and then at like 7 p.m., 20 minutes before people were supposed to show up, he calls you, is bailing out on it, and his whole thing is like, yeah, well, the script just isn't very funny. It's not good.
That's what, yeah, he goes, the script just isn't good. And I think the script was good. I think our execution might have been poor, but I'm pretty sure the script was pretty
all right. It's a flawless production. That's my opinion.
Rick is in love with the film on every level. But
I can't see one criticism that anyone would have
for it. I'm also very critical of my own work, so that's partially why I feel the way I do. But I don't know. I feel like it was a good script. And at the time, like, everybody was gearing up to do it, and everybody was pretty, who was in it was pretty pumped. And, like, he was supposed to be in a number of scenes, and he, like, bailed out on all of them.
Why would you do that? If you don't want to be a part of it, just say, you know what, I'm really busy now.
Or if you think why would you go out of your
way to be an asshole about it?
Why would you just be like, oh yeah, I can't show up, or my dog died, or something, and it would have been fine. But to be like, oh, the script's just not very good.
God, that's the sort of thing that pisses me off. If, you know, it's one thing if you're going to be, you know, flaking out, that's fine. You know what? Just cancel on us.
Yeah.
Don't give us a real reason. But instead, someone that we were like, oh, he's a pretty nice guy. We would consider him a friend.
Yeah. We were really cool with him in class.
To be a dipshit about it and just be like, eh, well, F you guys. I'm a prick.
And it's like, it'd be one thing if I held his opinion high regard, but it's like, he hasn't really done anything that's really impressed me. And I've seen some of the stuff that he's done on the side, similar to the work that we've done, and in no way, shape, or form does it excel what we do or whatever. You know, I don't want to say because some it was all right, but it wasn't like, and I don't want to say what we do is flawless. I know you do, but
it is flawless.
But
you look at those scripts, you look at the filming, you look at the acting, all of it. Just
it's like if the Coen brothers did Sketchbook.
Exactly. I mean, it's a perfect movie.
So, anyway, but by no means is what he did, like, anywhere close to, like, having the ability to judge other people's films or scripts in the critical sense that he did. So that's just kind of what pissed me off. He had no credentials to say what he did. And it's fine if you're going to say that, but don't get extremely involved in the production on the level that he did. Because I had called him 2 or 3 times and been like, all right, do you want to be in this scene? Do you want to be in this scene? Are you going to show up this day? Yeah, I'll be there. And then, like, literally 30 minutes before he was supposed to be there, the script's just not very good.
Man. So seeing
and it's like, even if that was a fake reason, that's not a very good fake reason. That's like, I'm going to piss these people off the most I can with my fake reason, as opposed to being like,
His reason is like, I'm addicted to crack. I'm unreliable. I'm shooting up right now.
That would be fine. That would have been better than, hey, you know, I you guys' script sucks. So, screw you. So anyway, seeing him must have been awkward, because that was the last time that we kind of had interaction with him, and I haven't seen him since.
Yeah, so, you know, I tried to be a little on the, like, he's doing that thing, I show up, and he's ignoring me. It's like, what the hell? Like,
I'm here, yeah.
I'm right here. You know who I am. You can't even do, like, a head nod. So then I go out of my way to, like, hey, buddy, how's it going? Like, to be overly friendly. Because one of the things that you don't want to do in life is become an enemy of mine.
No.
Because,
or mine as well, yeah. It's not a good deal.
I'm, like, as I brought up with the guy who was shirtless, the body.
Yeah.
I become incredibly creepy, like, looking up, like, his history and tracking that down so I can make fun of him.
Me and you, are both something we enjoy doing and something we're very good at, which is kind of a horrible thing, is tearing people down. And I think we both excel at it to almost a, you know, inane degree, to where we could make a living off doing it, we would. And I'm sure there's ways that we could, but I just don't know if I could live with myself, but...
I'm probably not as extreme as I was back when Tom and I decided that since I was mad at someone not being who they said they were, deciding to say that one of our friends was dead. But, you know, it just...
At the same time, yeah, I know. I'm not afraid to be confrontational if I have to, and you're the same way where it's like, I'm going to come at you. I'm going to do it.
Well, here's the thing. I'm a very laid-back sort of guy.
Yeah.
It takes a while for me to get riled up. I
as well, but it's once you get there, yeah.
And, you know, I'll let things slide. It's okay. You know what? That's fine. Like, for example, when I was in college, there was a guy who I ended up having a class with every semester, which is... I mean, that's...
There's sometimes people, like, with me, it was Ivor Nelson. Like, we almost had a class almost every semester, but yeah.
But this is 8 semesters, 4 years. So I've had... Okay. I had a class with him every year, and he just was so pompous, and he ticked me off, and it was the sort of thing where I saw him one night at a midnight showing of Cannibal the Musical, and so the next day, this was the first semester with him.
Is that on DVD, by the way?
Yes.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
It's great.
I've been to the dining hall that inspired Cannibal the Musical.
Oh, really?
Yes. The Colorado University Dining Hall, University of Colorado Boulder, which is named after the guy who they based Cannibal the Musical off of.
It is like a classic. When Carl, Mike, Andy Berman, myself, Steve Loopy, when we saw that in high school, like, it changed our lives. It's
by Trey Parker and Matt Stone. If you don't know what it is, it preceded South Park and Orgasmo.
Yeah, they made it in college, and it's really a fun movie.
That's what I've heard. I just heard I gotta see it, and I haven't had a chance to. But yeah, if you love South Park and Team America, you definitely have to check that out.
The music is tremendous.
That's what the music in South Park was up for an Oscar. I mean, they're better than... I love how Seth MacFarlane, like, everybody gives him credit for being this music guy. The reason he made a cartoon is because he couldn't hack it on Broadway writing musical theater. So for him not to do that, whereas Trey Parker and Matt Stone were just like, we're really good at writing, you know, musical music.
Well, Trey Parker went to Berklee School of Music, and then went to Colorado. It's great. So, anyhow, I saw this guy at one of the screenings, and next time I saw him in class, I was like, hey, did you enjoy Cannibal the Musical? Have you seen it before? Yeah, I've seen it before. Yeah, it's a good movie. Just, like, totally, like, I'm trying to be friendly.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't really know him at this point, so I'm just being a nice guy about it. And he's just like, I didn't see you there. I was sitting right next to him. And so,
wow.
As it went on, each semester he would do something that would piss me off a little more, make a little comment, like, and then I finally snapped.
Just go out of his way.
Snapped one day. I was in a graphic novel class with Tom Fuchs. I hadn't read any comic books at that point, but it sort of made me interested in comics. Yeah. And so we're taking the class, and it's the day after the Super Bowl.
It's early on in the semester, like, right. first one or two first classes.
And it was the Super Bowl with I think it was the Steelers. I forget who it was.
The one where the Steelers won?
Yeah, but I think it was either that one or the year before. When Paul McCartney performed at halftime that year.
2004, 2005?
Yeah. Yeah. So Paul McCartney performed at halftime. The year before was the Nipplegate scandal. So this is the Eagles Patriots Super Bowl.
Okay.
And so we're talking about the Super Bowl halftime show, and Paul McCartney put on a great halftime show.
It's my favorite
of all time.
Since U2, it was my favorite.
Yeah, U2 did a great one, too. And this guy pipes up that, you know, I didn't think it was very good. You know, they should go with the younger crowd. They should go with the younger musician.
Which obviously works so... And not to mention, just even before the nipple thing, like...
That was a shitty halftime show.
It was an awful halftime show. Like, it was a critical failure on every level.
I remember, like, Jessica Simpson in a band uniform to start it off. It was awful.
It was awful, and then, like, I don't... Just all the performers they had, I think they had, like... I don't even know, but, like, it was, like, bands that were, like, the B-list band in every category, and then they had, like, Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson. I think Justin Timberlake's the only... Even then, that was, like, after Justified, so it wasn't even, like, after... I think people have now given him more credit as a musician, and I personally have given him more credit as a musician now, a pop musician.
So...
But even then, like, he wasn't even that great, so...
So he's ripping apart Paul McCartney's halftime show.
Yeah.
And something just boils over me, and I'm like, no, you're wrong, he was great.
And like, it's like everyone else in the class is like, what the hell?
I know. This is just like, you know, everyone's just being conversational, just sort of, oh, hey, did you watch
the Super Bowl the other night? Yeah.
Like,
in a perfect democratic, like, college, you know.
I am fuming. Like, oh, why don't you understand? And so, like, everyone sort of agrees with me for the sake of agreeing with
like,
me.
Like, let's just kind
of. And we're walking out of class at one point, and I heard one of the guys, like, I don't know if he was trying to get me riled up again, and he's like, but he, as we were in the union, he's like, I can't believe that guy was saying that thing about how bad Paul McCartney was, and he was behind me, and I turn around, I'm like, I know! It's unbelievable! Just ridiculously pissed off, and so I didn't really get my revenge on him other than yelling at him loudly about Paul McCartney, but I consider that revenge
in a graphic novel class.
Because he was the sort of person who always thought he was right, and I don't think he'd ever been yelled at in his life until that day.
It's one of those, I don't know, you just,
Oh my god, Drew! Drew! We need a seance!
It just started like going one way, and it just kept going. Like, there's those people who have, like, very strong opinions, and you don't like any of them.
Yes, and yes, he was one of them. It's
difficult to get along with those people, and I feel like he was one of those people.
Except for Cannibal the Musical. But then he wouldn't acknowledge it.
He didn't seem very enthusiastic with the fact that he liked the movie, so I think he just kind of liked it. Which reminds me of my roommate from January to May. He's just one of those people who has very strong opinions about things, and I disagree with almost every single one of them. Like, very rarely do we agree on something. He's a gigantic Red Sox fan. I think the Red Sox are the Yankees with just a little less money and less championships.
They've become the Yankees, though, in the past few years.
The way that they've accumulated money and the way that they've accumulated players without, you know, care of, you know, the game and the sport and just kind of, you know, taking the... Well, we'll just buy a championship, and that's pretty much what they've done. And so, I don't know. I do not like the Red Sox. I don't like the Red Sox fan base and how hostile they are towards other fans.
I rooted for them in 2004.
I think everybody in the world rooted for them.
And then they became insufferable.
Yeah, exactly. And then by 2006, I think everyone was extremely over it. So, yeah. Anyway, he has opinions about that. This is the same guy who thought Shooter was a great movie. Starring Mark Wahlberg, thought it should have been nominated for Academy Awards. He's just the character dynamic of Mark Wahlberg's character.
The character dynamic of the character.
That's what he said. That's a direct quote. I don't know. He thinks he's extremely intelligent. He thinks he's like God's gift to the world because he's very well built because he, you know, works out a lot all the time. And he thinks he's very intelligent, but he's not very intelligent. I don't want to say intelligent because you can't really judge a person's intelligence, but intellectual. He's not very intellectual at all. And he thinks he is, though. So he tries to like get off on being both, and he's not at all. And so he just pisses me off because he tries to be things that he's not, and he gets by some of the time, which really pisses me off with some people. Especially with women who find him cute, and he just... I could never find a less attractive man than him.
In terms of getting pissed off, I had a moment while I was driving this week where I got pissed off. I was with my sister.
Okay.
And, you know, you tend to do the classic, oh, that guy's an idiot, he's driving too fast, you know.
Yeah.
But every now and then you see someone with bumper stickers. What did you just eat, Drew? You look shocked.
Okay, so... I have one of the Lindor chocolates, and then there's like kind of that was in a blue foil package, which is the milk chocolate, and then there was like, kind of like a gold colored package. So I pulled that one out, and it was white chocolate, but it just kind of tastes a little weird, a little funny, a little bit like carrots.
Thought there was gonna be more to that. Oh well. So
continue.
Every now and then you see someone with a bumper sticker that's just so stupid. And, like, wrong-headed that you want to slam your car into them and kill them instantly. Yeah. So, my sister and I were at a stoplight, and the car, it's a few cars in front of us on the right side, has two bumper stickers. One of it, which says, peace through ammunition. It's like, what? Bumper sticker slightly above that reads, If Islam is a peaceful religion, a stick of dynamite is just a candle. And it's like,
these are things you think but should not say.
No. It's just like, what? Like,
where did they even make these?
Like, you're being blatantly a racist and an asshole. I can't, like, you don't deserve to live.
No.
So I creep up with my car, and I want to get a look at this jokester, this idiot who has this on. I get up to him. We look over. He's in a Boy Scout uniform. He's a troop leader.
Oh, my God.
And it just refuels my hatred of all things that are related to the Boy Scouts of America. I hate the Boy Scouts. If I have a son, he will never be a Boy Scout.
What if he, like, starts, like, sneaking away at night and telling you that he's going to basketball practice?
Have you realized?
And then you find out that he's at, like, Boy Scout meetings?
Have you realized that every person you ever meet who's an Eagle Scout is a fucking asshole?
They all have this sense of entitlement. Yeah. Like, I'm an Eagle Scout. It's like, whoop-de-doo.
Yeah.
What does that do for you in life? Does that get you a high-paying job? No. Does he really get into your college? No. That's what your SAT scores and your, like, grades are for. Like, Eagle Scout is just another extracurricular activity. It's like, yeah, he's an Eagle Scout, but will that get you, like, solidify your position in admissions? No, not at all. Will it, you know, I don't know, like, make you some part of some super secret brotherhood? No, everybody's been a fucking Boy Scout, all right?
Yeah. So, I dropped out of the Boy Scouts in second grade. It's probably the best decision I made as a child. My dad wanted me to keep going, but I was like, no, it's not fun at all. It's boring as hell.
Yeah.
And people take it way too serious. It's the sort of thing where you don't realize that it's like, have you ever watched Penn & Teller Bullshit?
No.
They did an expose on the Boy Scouts, which sort of reaffirmed my feelings in it, that basically it's a Christian organization that's being passed off as a government thing. And I hate the inclusion of church and state. Keep them separate.
I agree with that. I think it is an overtly Christian organization. Even like they're like eight ideals or whatever. Like God is one of them.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, but then you're claiming to be a secular organization and you're not. But like, it'd be one thing if they were like, you know, the Knights of Columbus or, you know, whatever, where it's part of the title, where it's like the church.
The Christian Boy Scouts of America.
Well, the Masons, you would say, are, you know, a partly religious organization in terms of that. But the Boy Scouts also are, but totally neglect the fact that they are.
Yeah.
You know, like, so I don't know. I have problems with the Boy Scouts. I think the Boy Scouts up through, like, the 60s, that's when everything changed.
Old school Boy Scouts is one thing.
But I think in the 60s it became, you know, a sign of, I'm not a hippie, so I'm a Boy Scout, you know, type of thing. Like, I'm going to be an asshole. And, I don't know. So it's...
Old school Boy Scouts is one thing.
Old school Boy Scouts is one thing.
I mean, you look at the veterans, the old school Boy Scout guys.
But it's like an easy place for, older men to, like, inflict their beliefs and opinions.
Yeah.
Like this one guy on, you know, young impressionable minds. Now these guys grow up to be extreme right-wing a-holes. And it's like, I'm fine with them being extreme right-wing a-holes because in our country that's all right. You know, you have your opinion, you can do what you want. But for them to be influenced by...
But don't let it be because of a Boy Scout leader and his stupid-ass backwards opinions about entire people's... Oh, my God.
Oh, exactly.
Peace through ammunition.
And I'm fine with him having those opinions. Do I think they're right at all? No, I think they're completely wrong.
I'm not fine with him having those opinions.
Rick, well, that's your opinion. And according to the First Amendment, he should have those. But also, I just don't think he should... I don't think it's a very smart thing to do. Look at it from that angle. The Muslim population in this country is growing pretty rapidly. And one of them, you know, could get pretty pissed off one day and kill him. That would kind of prove the point of the bumper sticker. But at the same time...
You know, maybe that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to antagonize one of the, you know, the sleeper cell.
Well, you know the God Hates Fags organization and all those guys... That's their whole thing is like their organization. There's a larger blanket organization, but one of the sects is godhatesfags.org.com, whatever. And they're this extreme right wing. They claim to be Christian, but nowhere in the Bible does it say, you know, God is hate. You know, there's a whole passage that's read at every single wedding ever. God is love. God is whatever. but they claim that he hates gay people and hates these people and hates these people. Do you remember the one guy who comes to UBM and stood in the quad?
Yeah.
And has his gigantic signs of all these people that God hates. They're pretty much along the same lines. And they came out to our church, and they, since our church was in La Jolla on this kind of like public promenade, they would stand out front of our Presbyterian church and like say all these things. And like, we like on the sidewalk out in front, it's like, we didn't want them to be there, but at the same time, like, they're looking for a fight. They're looking for you to come up to them and say, like, what you're doing is wrong. And then they'll just, they're so good at it.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they're looking
for. I did
for.
Get one of them, though. Really? Well, it was one of those times where they were doing the, like, sometimes the gay, lesbian, transgender, and bisexual thing would have a, you know, just a pro, you know, sexual preference, you know, rally. And these guys would be there. Just being like, hey, you know, God hates homosexuals.
Yeah.
And there's three guys there. Meanwhile, like a whole, like, everyone's behind the, was it the LGBT?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's three guys with these shitty looking signs, and like, they're just getting railed against. So I go up to them, seeing this, and I'm like, you guys are cool as fuck. You're the coolest people I've ever seen. And then I just walk away. I don't even give them a chance to respond. I go straight into the union. It was my freshman year, and it just really pissed me off that they were doing this. So
the other thing that I don't like, though, is, you know, it's fine to... I think the expansion of, you know, liberal politics in this country is a good thing, because I think most of the world is a little left of where we are. I'm having another Airhead, because they're so delicious. But at the same time, I don't like in college how everybody just instantly becomes a liberal, even though they don't agree with half of the things that, you know, the left side of the margin stands for.
I would consider myself probably a moderate. I'm liberal on the majority of things except for crime. I am, like, I am intensely conservative on crime. I don't think people get punished enough for the crimes. I just... Come on! I don't understand why Democrats are so willing to defend people who did crimes, why sentences aren't stricter for people who, you know, attempted murder. It blows my mind, actually.
Yeah. And, I don't know, I just don't like how everybody goes to college and instantly, like, oh, you know, I'm gonna rebel against my parents. But... They don't believe half the stuff they
do. Did you just say, I'm going to rappel against my parents? They've got a rope and they're going down against
I imagine one of the children being Ted Danson's daughter, and since his head is kind of shaped like a crag, like, she rappels off his forehead and down. There's a fun visual. Just imagine Ted Danson's head, and then imagine a woman rappelling down the side of it.
This has become probably the most political episode that we've had.
I think so. Slumber party politics.
Remember when you were like 12 years old and you had your friends over, you need Airheads and white
warheads.
Chocolate.
Remember Warheads?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They would be real sour and you'd be like, what's the deal with liberals?
Slumber party politics. I love it. No. What party are you part of? The slumber party. Well, that's who I'm voting for. The slumber party candidate this year is Dark Horse. I think it's Bobby Jindal, the mayor, the governor of Louisiana. Bobby Jindal. So, you know, have you read up on Bobby Jindal?
I have no idea who
Bobby
this
Jindal is.
Is
an Indian man who's a Republican by trade, and he's now the governor of Louisiana. A lot of people think that McCain might pick him as his vice president, but he's extremely, like, young. So, I don't know if he's going to, but I just love
Bobby Jindal. How young is he?
I love Bobby Jindal, though. He's pretty cool. So,
oh, okay.
I'm just going to put that out there. Bobby Jindal, he's my guy.
he's my horse.
He's my dark slumber party horse. So, yeah, got a little political there. But what I'm just saying is that those people piss me off, like, even more than people who with opinions that I don't agree to. Like, if they're very strong and firm and, like, that's what they believe. Just because, like, anybody in college, like, will change their opinion, like, 8 to 9 times over the course of college. Like, you'll talk to them one week and be like, wow, so I know you're, like, really into acting out against Darfur. And they'd be like, no, I'm for Darfur now.
Wait, you're for Darfur?
People switch their opinions all the time in college. They're very easily impressionable.
So right now, we've got like a week and a half left, right, Drew?
Yeah.
Just a handful of episodes left in the run. As you can tell, no guests today. What if we had and they couldn't figure out where to jump in with all this discussion?
No, what if they just missed the opening and have just kind of been sitting there the entire time, just kind of silent observer, and then we're like, oh, you're a guest, not just an observer, and they're like, oh, I can talk? I'm trying to be Michael Jordan.
And yeah, every time he opens up the gummy sabers, he decides to make them like rings and put them on his fingers. So, like brass knuckles. Gummy brass knuckles.
Come here, Rick. I'll give you a delicious punch.
Okay.
I'm just going to throw this out there. If I'm ever the mayor... If I'm ever...
The mayor? If I'm ever the mayor, expect everyone to be mandated to wear gummy sabers.
I'm going to be a lawyer. No, you're not. You're going to be mayor. That's right. I'm going to be mayor. There's another Back to the Future reference from this episode. Anyway, no, if I'm ever the owner of a professional sports franchise that wins a championship, as a joke, when they wheel out the rings, they're all just going to be, like, nicely chiseled ring pops. And then I'm going to be, like, just play it off, like, yeah, guys, here you go, here's your rings.
But don't have real rings for them. This will be it. So everyone will be like, oh, ha, ha, and eat it. What are you doing?
And then after a week or two goes by, I'll, like, cave in and be like, fine, I'll get you guys new rings, fine. But if I ever had a professional sports franchise, I think I'd pull a lot of crap. Like, on April Fool's, if everyone owned the Chargers, I'd want to say that we were moving the team to Tijuana and then, like, have everybody think it was a joke, but have, like, legitimately moving vans there and, like, have them pack up and, like, roll out of the stadium.
Tear the stadium down.
And drive across the border.
Start rebuilding on April 2nd.
Drive across the border, yeah, and then, set up an office down there, like, for, like, a good, like, week or two, be the Tijuana Chargers.
Have an office in Tijuana. Have you ever been there?
Yeah.
I assume you probably have been.
Yeah.
Because you live close to it.
Yeah.
Growing up. I found that to be the most miserable place in the world. Never been sadder in my life being in Tijuana.
It's an awful, awful place. And it's kind of like, it's just sad that it's, you know, right there just south of the border. But unfortunately, I feel like everybody neglects Mexico because it's our neighbor and is like, oh, we'd rather focus on Africa, which is half a world away. And Africa, legitimately, I think, has more problems than Mexico. But they're like literally like a stone's throw from our country and no one does anything. And it's becoming our problem, you know, with them pouring into our country. Once again, we're getting back into politics here. But I feel like people should, you know, be more aware of, like, how bad it really is.
So what you're saying is if we supported the Mexico as a country more, there wouldn't be such a big issue of illegal immigration.
No, that would solve the problem. Why are they leaving? Because the country sucks. Sunflower seeds.
The Drew's Eat-a-thon has been brought to you by Airheads, Power Bar, Walgreens Select, Lifesavers, Gummies, Wild Berries, Sour Patch Kids that have not been touched. What are the chocolates?
Oh, Drew? Crap, they're pouring out everywhere.
And Lindor chocolates.
The Sour Patch Kids are good, but I think I'm going to need popcorn.
The worst hour in terms of, I don't know, just, I can't imagine trying to listen to this, and I'm sorry for...
What, the politics or the...
Politics and candy, it's one or the other, but the combination is just insufferable.
But, anyway, hey Rick, did you see any movies this last week?
I did, I saw Step Brothers with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly, and most notably, Catherine Hahn. Who plays Will Ferrell's brother's wife, and she has kind of a remarkable role. She was in Boeing Boeing, so I was very happy to see her get an over-the-top role.
What's Boeing Boeing?
Boeing Boeing is the play that Lee and I saw in New York City with Bradley Whitford, Gina Gershon, Christine Baranski.
Not ringing a bell.
Well, it's all about a guy who's in Paris.
I'm kidding. I'm just blowing your line.
What did you think? You saw the film too. I know you have.
Yeah,
talked about this yesterday.
On the phone. This is one of the few conversations we've had off air that we've brought on air, I think. Because most of those we try to just, like, kind of not try and recreate them. I like the film on a whole. I think I like what they were trying to do with it, which was the whole thing was filmed on a studio lot, besides several select scenes and stuff like that. But
but other than that, the whole thing.
Most of it, yeah, was filmed at Culver City Studios. And I don't know, I think they were shooting for just a smaller scope on this film. You know, Talladega Nights was so big with Anna McKay and John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell all working together. It was such a big film in terms of budget and sports movie, NASCAR, all that stuff. Where I think with this one, they kind of just wanted to bring it down a little. A lot of Will Ferrell's movies have been pretty big lately. And I think with this one, I think the idea was to bring it smaller and just kind of like a very just kind of character-based story with, you know, not the action or, you know, the big sets and stuff driving it, just kind of like people living out their daily lives. And the characters are crazy, but they're, you know, living in these everyday habitats. And so that was kind of exciting. And yeah, I don't know. I thought it was fun. I thought it was definitely a very popcorn comedy. Nothing too, you know, serious or too hard-hitting about it. But there were some really good, fun appearances in there. And you could just really tell that John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell were having a lot of fun making the movie. And being in it, and I think my favorite character was the brother Derek. Yeah. Was Will Ferrell's real brother, Derek, who's
in the movie. In the movie. Derek Ferrell.
Derek Ferrell. What an asshole.
No, he was fantastic. I would definitely agree. He have you? I wasn't familiar with who that actor was. Did you recognize him from anything?
No, I recognize his face. But, you know, when you watch so many movies, you know, you just kind of see faces and stuff, so.
But honestly, it's a breakout performance.
It really is, you know, for anyone who sees that movie is going to remember that guy as, oh, he was in Step Brothers, right, you know. So, he was just really good, because he comes on, and, you know, you think, oh, just kind of another guy kind of filling a straight man role in the performance, and he starts out just kind of, like, slowly building, but by the end of the film, he's just, you know, a riot, and just kind of really hilarious.
And he plays it completely like Tom Cruise, which is amazing.
Which is, yeah, the like his inspiration, obviously, for the role with the hair and the clothing choices.
And he kind of has a similar face to Tom Cruise.
Very much so, yeah. Did he? He might have. This might have been what you've seen him in was, I don't know, I didn't IMDb it, but Scary Movie 4, where they have the Tom Cruise lookalike. On the Oprah show?
No, because that's Craig Bierko.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I just know that because Lee and I really like Craig Bierko. He was on Sex and the City as a jazz musician, and then we saw him in Cinderella Man, and he was really good in that, and then I was like, oh, yeah. And then he's in Scary Movie 4. And I was like, oh, let's give Scary Movie 4 a shot. We never got around to renting it, but we did watch the YouTube
clip. Oh, it wasn't that. It was one of these scary movies, the epic movie or date movie, or was it Meet the Spartans, where they had it again. They were making fun of the Tom Cruise thing.
Wait, so they redid the whole bit from Oprah?
Yeah.
That's also in Scary Movie 4?
Scary Movie 4 got to it first, and then this movie went at it again.
Like, so. It's revisited.
Yeah. We don't think Zucker did a good enough job with it, so we're coming back to it again. He might have been that guy, but he definitely just gave a really good performance.
So wait, have you seen, like, Epic Movie and those? Like,
I saw Epic Movie. Did not see Date Movie.
Why would you, like?
It was painful.
It's the sort of thing where I'm.
It's kind of like subjecting yourself to torture for 2 hours.
I'm one where if someone says a movie is awful and just gets ragged on like Gigli or Ishtar, I'll go out of my way just to see it.
I will as well.
But with those movies, you can tell what you're getting. Like, I've seen enough bad parody comedies and know that this is not well-structured. It's just throwing gags at you.
It's what movies that I think they legitimately pulled a bunch of sixth graders out of Hollywood Middle School.
It's the most obvious parody.
Gave them, like, you know, word perfects. Or remember those little, like, those little, like, word processing machine laptops? Not even, like, laptops, but word processing machine laptops, and said, write some script, and then took those ideas and exploited them for, you know, however many millions of dollars it made. Because the sick thing is that, yeah, you know, Scary Movie was successful, the Scary Movie franchise, but, you know, that's been top teams of comedy writers writing that stuff.
Well, it's been shitty anyways. I hate the Scary Movie series.
But as far as that goes, it's been that top level of shittiness.
top level of shittiness.
When Zucker came on in 3, Scary Movie 3, that was probably the best of the series. Because it was all the bits that he'd been saving up, I feel, for like 10 years, ever since Naked Gun, you know, ended. He had a lot of little good bits in there that just necessarily weren't even like parody bits, just little fun bits.
Yeah.
And but after that, I think that and then, you know, Date Movie and Not Another Teen Movie. And
Wait. Have you seen Not Another Teen Movie?
I did see Not Another Teen Movie. I'm just listing off the categories.
Not Another Teen Movie is an exception to the rule. That's pretty funny.
It's pretty funny, but there is some bits where you're like, eh.
It's obvious at times, but
there is still some bits that are eh.
I'm completely negating my argument by going out and sticking up for Not Another Teen Movie.
So you're a hypocrite.
Essentially, I am.
But this is
but
why,
Not
this
Another
is
Teen
why,
Movie was written.
This is why I watch, Rick. It's because everyone says no. And when everyone says no, I want to be the one who says yes and be right.
I guess I completely negated my point there.
Pretty much. Apparently, my eating has gotten a bunch of crumbs all over.
But Not Another Teen Movie, if I'm not mistaken, that was also a higher caliber parody movie.
It was, oh yeah, I put it up there with Scary Movie 3 in terms of parody movies. But it was also done by a better team of writers and directors. And it's just, the sick thing is, Meet the Spartans, Date Movie, Epic Movie, which you look at and you go, that is in no way, you know, on parallel with Scary Movie 3 or Not Another Teen Movie. But people go to it and they make millions of dollars. How is this possible? How do, like, they just, like, wheel geriatrics in and they pay, the like, $10 to see the movie and that's how these movies make money? How do they make money? Is that
six, I like that. That's the best excuse. Well, you know, made $20 million. Yeah, I can consider, like, $15 million of that is geriatrics being wheeled in to see it.
I don't know. What I'm saying is, like, is the sixth grade demographic really that big for this thing to succeed? Like, I feel like it's middle schoolers and, you know, people who don't really want to see a movie or just go make out in the back of a theater. That's pretty much the what you're getting at.
So. The blue streak way. Let's see. Should we? What's your sandwich pick of the week, Drew? You took, like, a huge handful of
sunflower seeds. I know. You asked me when I was mid-chew.
Serves you right.
Rick just really festered over my eating this episode.
You couldn't hold off.
No.
Either delay the show 15 minutes to get a sandwich in you. Get some real food.
Well, you know what sandwich I would have had, Rick, had I delayed the show 15 minutes? Would have been the Cousins. Cousins, which is another sub manufacturer, who's actually having labor disputes right now. Cousins, wheat bread, honey chicken, or honey barbecue chicken, with lettuce.
Are you a Cousins guy or a Subway guy?
Neither.
Neither?
I think I'm more of a Submarina guy, which is a California brand. They like, slice the meat right there for you, like, off the thing. The bread is pretty fresh, and it's nice and, like, it's wider than Subway and Cousin Subs.
Like, so, a two-foot-wide sub.
I like a sub that I can get my hands on. Two-hander. That's what I like.
I think I'm one of the few people that prefers Subway over Cousins. I don't really, like, Cousins, I don't care for their meat at all. They emphasize so much about the bread. It's like, better bread, worse meat, Cousin Subs.
I would agree with that. I think the service I've always gotten in Subway, even though it's a larger chain, I always get better service when I go there than to a Cousins.
Yeah, Cousins just takes way too long.
Takes way too long. There's like 6 people there. Like, all of them are standing around.
And they're always fucking up and putting onions on their food.
The one person who takes the order is the person who makes the sub. I don't know what the other 5 are doing. So, I just don't like the way that Cousins is ran. I see why now they're having labor disputes.
I'm doing all the work. The other 5 are just standing around. This is ridiculous.
It's part of their corporate structure.
Like, it's part of the mandate that at all times we must have 5 employees doing nothing while one does all the work.
And this is Rick. And my sub pick of the week is the chicken parmesan at Subway. I'm bringing it back.
Rick, what's going on with your voice?
I don't know. I just got an air bubble in my nose.
Oh man, that's unbelievable. I don't know what's going on with your voice, Rick, but I'm
just stuck. Do I really eat like one of the aliens from Futurama?
Apparently.
I guess.
That was a bit of a role reversal there. That wasn't really me with my sandwich pick. Although, my sandwich pick this week is the chicken parmesan sub. But, and that wasn't Drew. That was me pretending to be Drew. I mean, it was... It's a pretty good impression. I have to say, the audience is probably... kind of confused because the wool's been pulled over their eyes. Like, they totally thought that was me with my sandwich pick, and they totally thought it was you eating. I don't know. It's a bit of an illusion. I don't know if they can trust us the rest of the way out.
Much like my grandfather, the one who mentioned the naked women, he did not enjoy Brian De Palma's Mission Impossible because he felt it was too confusing because John Voight, to ruin it for anyone who hasn't seen it, dies and then comes back. And he didn't understand how that was possible, that it was all a setup and that he didn't actually die. So much like that, I feel like our listeners are confused.
Here's the Mission Impossible series. Mission Impossible 1, okay. Mission Impossible 2...
It's De Palma, so you gotta give it some credit.
Mission Impossible 2, terrible. Just one of the worst movies I've ever seen. Just loud, nonstop, and incoherent. Mission Impossible 3, one of the best action movies I've ever seen. Fantastic. Suspenseful.
I refuse to give it that much credit because Tom Cruise is in it and an executive producer of the film.
I think...
But I feel like J.J. Abrams did everything he could to make it a good film.
The inclusion of Simon Pegg cancels out that it's Tom Cruise. Give it that.
Oh, I want to. I want to so badly, but...
Oh, man, I want to give it to
I will give it. I'll give it to Star Trek, where Simon Pegg is being included as Scotty in the film. So, J.J. Abrams apparently really wants Simon Pegg's nuts. Okay. You heard it here first.
Was J.J. Abrams gay?
No, it's
not. No.
I think he's actually married.
I thought that might have been a bit... Nope. You just felt like saying it. What's your album pick of the week? Pick of the week again.
J.J. Abrams Likes Men. That's my album pick of the week. It's by a band called Simon Pegg Nut Lovers.
Oh, so you were just setting it up for the music. I'm sorry that I was insulted you.
Yeah. My actual music pick of the week, even though that is a pretty good one, I don't know if you can find that one on iTunes, though. So my other pick of the week...
Might need to go to the Napster for that one.
You'll need to go back to 1997 in the time machine before J.J. Abrams or Simon Pegg had any sort of fan following
at all. Someone had a vision.
John Foreman, the frontman for Switchfoot, he has done four EPs, each for a different season, starting in fall all the way through to summer. And for over the last 2 years, it hasn't been through 1 year, it's been ever 2 years. And they're all pretty good. And his latest one, Summer, it's just called Summer EP, and it's by John Foreman. And the four tracks on there are all pretty good.
Now, is it eventually going to be released as an album? Like, Seasons by John Foreman?
No, I think it was just kind of a side project he did on the side of Switchfoot. It's a little more acoustic, and there's no real, I think it's pretty much all of it's acoustic. So, it's good stuff, though.
I'm going to go with the New Standards. New Standards are, it's the bass player from Semisonic, and then a guy from the band The Suburbs, and Chan Pauling is his name.
I never asked you how you felt about New Radicals, a band similar in musical taste to Semisonic. Sure.
New Radicals, they released one album and then broke up. New Radicals, I don't think it's similar to Semisonic at all. The one song that they did, was the song,
Don't Let Go. They've got a few songs that I like.
Okay, I heard their album. A friend of mine recommended it to me because she thought that I would like it.
I think they could have been bigger than the Beatles.
It was actually my first girlfriend in high school.
They could have worn a bunch of goofy.
She really liked the New Radicals, and so she gave me their CD. She loaned it to me, and the one song that's good is the single
"Courtney Love and Marilyn Manson."
And The only reason that people think that sounds similar to Semisonic is because both that song and Closing Time were like hit singles at the same time. So it's like, oh my god, and they sound just like Fastball too with The Way.
The Way was a great song.
So that album, though, the rest of it is just weird. It's just a really weird, incoherent album.
Billboard Top 100 ever.
The album or the single?
The Fastball, The Way, New Radicals, Get What You Give, and Semisonic Closing Time all at the same time on the Top 100.
1998, the summer of 1998 was a great... You know what? We're going to go a little long. That was a great summer for music. You had Harvey Danger with Flagpole Sitta.
Flagpole Sitta was...
That was when the Bare Naked Ladies really emerged with 1 Week.
They had some good stuff there.
It was a great summer.
Grade 9. I think that was also... Was that the summer or the summer before LFO with Summer Girls?
Summer... I believe that was the summer after.
So people are still jamming to Summer Girls that summer. That's the way they started off. And they're like, what's all this new music coming out? Forget Summertime Girls are the kind I like. It's been 1 week since you looked at me.
No. Summertime Girls was the year after 1998.
They went forward in the future and then came back to the summer of 1998.
New Standards album is, they're like a jazz trio. They cover hit songs such as... they have an upcoming album that they do like a cover of the Postal Service with what's that song? Such Great Heights. They do a cover of that song, but on their first album, they just do a lot of fun songs like the song by Blur, song number 2. But it's like a jazz trio with a bass piano and vibraphone, so it's woohoo! Do 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 do. It's really, really fun.
That might be the greatest thing I've ever heard.
It's really, really fun.
I also love Blur.
It was the one thing I was really good friends with two of the people at the ticket office, and I would make music for them. I would just perform. I would make CDs for them because they would play it while they were working, and the New Standards CD was the one that really connected, and I think even though I'm gone, the influence of me in that office lasts with the New Standards.
Yeah.
Also, just incredibly nice guys.
So if you ever call in for, season tickets for the Milwaukee Bucks...
And you hear the song number 2 being played, but it's not Blur.
It's not Blur, and you're confused. You know why.
Just name drop New Standards, free season tickets. It's a new policy as I slam into something. What's your YouTube pick of the week, Drew?
It's a group called Funbox Comedy. And some of their stuff is good and some of their stuff is awful. So it's pretty hit or miss. But they're one of their best things, and the thing that I came across first, is called a Barred Spring Break, where these guys are going to spring break in Daytona Beach, and they have a bard along with them who sings of their travels, which is pretty funny. It's a pretty good little skit.
I'm going to go with a music video. I'm pretty sure it's probably on YouTube. I saw it on VH1 Classic the other day for the Cars' Shake It Up. Very recognizable song.
On that vein, I want to say Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up. There's another music video that you should go on YouTube and watch as well.
The Cars' video for Shake It Up, though, not very remarkable. it basically... Rick Ocasek is driving the car, driving a car.
Okay.
And he starts picking up, like an old lady, he picks her up, and then he picks up, like, he's picking women up, and women are shaking things. Like, one has a snow globe, and she is shaking it up. And then one of them, I think, is like, it's an old woman, and then at the end of the video... They, like, break out, and it turns out that even though looking at these women, they all seem very plain, they rip off their clothing the clothes that they're in, and it turns out that they're all attractive women, and they're all shaking it up. And it's a really incoherent video, and,
What does the treatment for that look like?
Okay, the band is the car, so we gotta get a car in there. He's gonna drive the car around. He's picking up women. They'll be shaking items, and, Also, we'll incorporate the other members of the band. They'll also be in the car playing.
Every single interpretation of Shake It Up that they possibly could take and put it into a music video, like an orgy of shaking it up. And they should have had, like, shit, like a mid-commercial, like halfway through the song where it just cuts out and there's, like, shake and bake, like a little, like, 30-second spot. That's what it would have been if I did.
They should have incorporated one of my favorite parts from Can't Stop the Music, where they're doing a campaign for milk, and the song that they do, which is aired as a commercial, a 3-minute commercial, is called do the shake, the milkshake, do the shake. And it's encouraging people to drink milkshakes, not necessarily milk, but milkshakes.
I guess milk still gets used.
Oh, God, I love that movie.
It literally sounds like something that would have come out of Arrested Development, as opposed to actually being something that was actually made during that time period.
What's your film pick of the week, Drew?
It's a Will Smith film, Will Smith's take on The Fugitive, otherwise known as Enemy of the State. Watched it the other day and was like, wow, you can see shades of early, you know, Will Smith in there, where you're like, this guy's gonna, you know, actually become a pretty legitimate performer from, you know, a kid who raps about parents not understanding.
I've never seen it. What's the basic plot?
He buys something, and then they think that he stole it and has government secrets, so they go after him, and he runs.
And there's a part where he jumps into a huge river.
That's The Fugitive. See, now you're getting
confused. Oh, I'm totally mixing them up now.
It's not a remake, Rick. It's just kind of a different take on the genre.
Is this the one with Wesley Snipes?
I think that's Blade.
I was referring to this Fugitive 2.
You were actually referring to Demolition Man. I'll run where you never will find me. 20 years in the future.
My pick of the week is the Talking Heads film, Stop Making Sense, one of the seminal concert films by Jonathan Demme, who also did films like Philadelphia, the first Silence of the Lambs. Have you seen Stop Making Sense, Drew? I'll keep talking because you're currently chewing, so I'll make it seem like I'm just excited.
I was just going to say Tom Hanks is hilarious in Philadelphia.
No. Philadelphia is a really good movie.
It's a great movie.
But Stop Making Sense is just ridiculous. David Byrne basically goes by the theory of, I'm going to do something for the sake of doing something and pass it off as being an artistic choice. That is, so this, it just gets crazy. Like at one point, he's just slapping his head repeatedly. And then the whole band and him are like jogging in place on stage during one of the songs, which is a great visual. Just people like pretending to run. And midway through the song, he starts doing like sprints around like the stage. And this isn't like a theater in the round, like a huge stage. Like it's somewhere in LA, like a Coliseum. So it's just sort of a flat square stage. And he's just sprinting around it like a madman. And also he comes out one point wearing a giant suit, like a huge big suit. He's a really skinny guy. But the music's great. It's really, like, it's completely unpredictable. It does stop making sense as soon as you start it. But if you commit to it, if you're like, you know what, this is just going to be fun, it's a hugely rewarding film.
You think it'd be something really good to watch when you're on some sort of illegal substance?
Probably not.
Would it scare you?
Maybe the giant suit would scare you as hell. Scare you as hell.
So it's definitely not the MJ pick of the week.
What's that?
I don't know. It's a new category.
The MJ?
Films that would be good to watch on some sort of illegal substance grown in the ground.
But what is MJ?
For our gigantic stoner demographic of two listeners.
I don't want to call people out, but John Thompson. John Thompson's baked like 98% of the time. That's why he listens to this show.
Really?
No, I don't think he's touched this stuff. And also the Pope. Huge stoner.
Huge stoner, huge listener.
what's your... I'm not going to stick to Steck. I'm just gonna stack deck myself for contradicting myself about the epic movies.
How about not liking it while I eat during shows?
I'm gonna. Oh man, I've been sticking it to Steck throughout the entire show, and that's just unacceptable. We've got a few more left. Thanks for listening to the show to this point. We've loved having you as listeners. Sorry that we got a little political in this episode.
It was bound to happen.
For episode 15, I've been Rick Katchke.
I've been Drew Steck.
And we've been
the Internet. Wait. I never got a Steck deck you back for that. Or, Steck deck you. For, me eating during stuff.
Oh, well, I had Steck deck.
Well, if you would have showed up at 1:15 like you were supposed to and not at 1
we
o'clock.
We had said 1 o'clock!
I'm pretty sure you said 1 o'clock and said it would be more like 1:15 though.
Well, you could have eaten with me here.
I've been Drew Steck.
Oh man, Drew, we talked about this. You do not want to get on my list.
I was trying to get out of the whole argument or win the argument by ending the episode.
I've been Rick Katchke.
I've been Drew Steck. Internet's maximum potential.
We're gonna settle the score right now.